Blog Talk Radio.
Never in the field of human conflict was so much owed by so many to so few. I hope, indeed I pray, that we shall not be found unworthy of our victory if after toil and tribulation it is granted to us. For the rest, we have to gain the victory. That is our task.
Let us therefore brace ourselves to our duty, and so bear ourselves that if the British Empire and its commonwealths last for 1,000 years, men will still say, this was their finest hour.
We shall not fail or falter, we shall not weaken or tire, neither the sudden shock of battle nor the long-drawn trials of vigilance and exertion will wear us down. Give us the tools, and we will finish the job. We shall go on to the end. We shall fight with growing confidence and growing strength. We shall defend our island, whatever the cost may be. We shall fight in the fields and in the streets. We shall fight in the hills. We shall never surrender.
You have tried to change my country. You've tried to change my life. No one ever asked me if I thought that this was right. It's time for us to tell you that we will go through hell to defend our country and to help BDL. I'm proud to be an Englishman and I'm going to be free. I won't forget the men who died to get that right to me. And we will stand out against you and defend England every day. There's no doubt we love this land. We'll save England and the UK. Lied to all the people and tried to take away their rights. But we won't let you sell this land, not without a fight. It's time for us to tell you that you can go to hell. It's time for us to stand and fight and join the EDL. I'm proud to be an Englishman and I'm going to be free. I won't forget the men who died to give that right to me. And we will stand out against you and defend England every day. There's no doubt we love this land. Come save England and the UK. Forget the men who died to get that right to me. And we will stand up against you and defend England every day. There's no doubt we love this land. So save England and the UK.
Love our land. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is the East Anglian ZDL radio show, broadcasting live on blogtalkradio.com. East Anglian ZDL radio show, the official English Defence League's radio station, and it's the official voice of the EDL. Tonight we've got Tommy English, my co-host of the show this evening, and we've got our very own Kel. No hijab for me, her nickname tonight. And also, one of the great panellists this evening is our very own Cat Strangler 101, our very own Mr. Tim Burton. Who let the cats out?
Meow!
Meow! Woof, woof, woof. It's good to see everybody. Everybody poured into the studio in one mad rush. There was tables, chairs, bottles, pots of tea going over. My goodness me,
sounds
guys.
Like the Waltz Old Demo all over again.
Yeah, New Year's Eve.
The coffee machine went all over the place. My goodness me, ladies and gentlemen. It was like a herd of cattle rushing into the studio.
Well, the Turtle Defense League are also running into the studio, aren't they, then?
But it's good to see everybody. Anyway, we're all here tonight, and actually, I see we've got a great gentleman who's sitting in the chat room this evening, our very own Mr. Glenn Saffer. Good to see you, Glenn. You never know, he might call in later on. Glenn, if you want to call in later, please do. Please do. Sarah Bella's going, moo. I just see the chat there. It sometimes deflects me from what I was going to talk about. I mustn't do that, Kelwyn. It's a bad thing when you look at it and you lose track of what you're going to say. But no, it's good to see everybody this evening. My goodness me, we had quite a busy chat room last night, didn't we? And looks like we've got the same this evening. Some very interesting topics we got into last night. And I know just before we went to our I was having a talk to Kel, and there's something she really wants, quite a serious issue that's arose in Canada. So maybe we might start the evening off with some news from our dear friends across the pond in Canada. So, and I like that no hijab for me, Kel, that's funny.
No hijab
well,
for me.
It's true. Do you know in the winter time when I go out, I have a pashima that I use as a scarf, and I wrap it around my head and around my neck. And now I feel like people think I'm a Muslim or something whenever I wear that damn thing on my head.
Is that a pashmina? Is that
pashmina.
Pashmina.
Did I say pashima? Yeah.
Yeah, pashima.
Yeah,
that's right.
Well, I wear this thing. Better write that down, pashmina.
Yeah, that's right.
It would help to get
you
my
you haven't been getting any remarks because they thought you was wearing your kebab. Your kebab.
I think they realize that I'm not. But every time now when I put the thing around my head to keep the cold out, it just makes me feel that much more self-conscious. I don't know.
Well,
you have to get the words right, Kel, because, of course, a pashmina is a very attractive scarf sort of headgear, where the pashima, of course, is an Arabic word for an unusual Saudi Arabian practice that we really can't talk about on the show. So it is important. These things are important, so you do need to get them right.
See, ladies and gentlemen, I come here to learn, and I do. Oh, Tim, thank goodness. Oh, gosh, you've got me sorted perfectly. Thank you.
Well, just in time, by the sound of it.
I think so. I might find myself, I don't know, some besotted Arabic man might be coming my way if I don't get myself sorted.
Are you going to rock the Casbah, Kel?
What's that, Tim? Tommy, what's that?
You're going to rock the Casbah.
I'm going to rock the Casbah.
Rock the Casbah.
I know a tune about that.
I bet. I should find that and upload it. I think we might even have that in the studio.
Well,
we probably
have,
Kel. We've got to play it now.
As Kel's going down the list, and we got, ladies and gentlemen, when you look into our studio and the panel will tell you, we've got a very, very long list of different things, haven't we, guys? It's
oh yeah,
and it grows every week a little bit longer. We take out different things that we need to, but we leave most of the good material in there, so it does grow ever sort of longer every week, doesn't it, guys? And I know Kel's still looking for that. You know she's going to come up with it.
I am.
But as a,
if I can't find it in the studio, I'll find it.
I know you will, Kel. But yes, Kel, what we do? You did, as I say, there was something you wanted to talk about that's come to your attention that you wanted to speak on the show this evening. Something in Canada, so maybe you'd like to...
Yeah, we'll do that in a bit. I'm just bringing up my page. I lost my page and I'm bringing it up, but I think Tommy was going to say something. And Tommy, were you going to be smart with me?
As if.
As if. He's that bloody Muslim that keeps coming in here and going, I kill you! That's the one, as if.
Silence!
Oh no, that's Ahmed, isn't it? Ahmed, he keeps creeping into it.
The dead terrorist.
Ladies and gentlemen, what you've just heard is an Ipswich terrorist, and you've also heard a terrorist with a West Midlands accent.
Oh, it's a bit of a giveaway, isn't it? Soylent, I'll kill you!
Soylent! I kill you!
Soylent, I'll kill
you! Oh, there he goes! Grabbing!
Oh, hang on, I'm on it, Jeff. Come on, Ahmed! Come on! Get out of here.
Watch you, don't leave
me. I got my
truncheon, Kel.
I think I got him today, this time.
The and what's that rucksack? That rucksack's very dodgy.
If Ahmed was from East Yorkshire, he won't be going sounds like he'll be going, oi, mate, shut up or I'll bash your head in, you hear?
hey up, lad. Keep the mouth shut. Keep the mouth shut, lad.
Are you taking Mick out of my area, Tim?
Oh, as if.
it's interesting. Now, we've all got our regional accents. I mean, me, I don't know. I'm a cross between a Londoner and Ipswich. Oh, he go now and again, like talk like that, and I think, my goodness me, what are you doing, Jeff? I'll go into London and I'll get my nephews and nieces saying, talk so roundabout.
My regional accent is across the Atlantic Ocean.
But there is though, Kel. Very much so.
As we all know, Kel is the only one in the studio with absolutely no accent at all. Isn't that right,
no.
Kel? Yes.
I don't have an accent.
Exactly.
People say I do. I'm sure I sound very... Canadian, especially the A. You know what I mean, eh?
Yeah.
That gets me away. But of course, when you are a native of your own land, you don't consider that you have an accent. But I suppose I do to you guys. And Sarah Bella says that I sound like an American almost always, and that's true probably because of the region of Canada in which I live. If I lived on the Atlantic Coast,
Texas?
For example, I would. If I lived in Newfoundland, I'd be sounding like this all the time, eh? You know what I mean? I've got to tell you.
Oh, is that what in Newfoundland? I could have sworn that was Texas, but there you go. What do I know about America?
No, if I wanted to sound like Texas, I'd sound like this. No, that's Alabama.
Oh.
Alabama.
We'll have to get Golf Dogs on here one day. He's a Texan. He'll set it straight for us.
Yeah. Meanwhile, if I'm going to speak proper Yorkshire over here, I mean, in response to what Kel's just said, if I was going to speak proper Yorkshire, I'd be going, I'll still fetch you one, married though you are, so watch your tongue. That's what we said in response to that.
To me, that sounds like Quran 434 in a Yorkshire accent.
That is hilarious.
Very good, Tim. Very good.
If the
anyway,
woman
tonight,
take the up, smack her over head with baseball bat. That's what I say.
But as I say, tonight is a little bit different this evening. As I say, it's Friday night, and as Kelson has put the headlines. On our banner this evening, the East Anglian EDL radio show. tonight being Friday night is also at the side, it's got Comedy Central. Well, we don't know how it's going to go. It's Friday anyway.
I wouldn't think for a moment we'll have the slightest bit of humour on here. I mean, the first 10 minutes have proved it.
No, that's why we don't get frequented by any Muslim, is it?
Tim Burton's going to turn into Tim Vine tonight.
Oh, no. I'm not going to do my Tim Vine impressions. I'll tell you what. I used to go out with this lovely woman, lovely young girl she was, only she got rid of me when I threw a bowl of raspberries and whipped cream at her. She said she didn't like to be trifled with.
Where's the drum for that?
Boom! I'm here all week.
Oh, I didn't know we had Michael McIntyre who called in.
Michael McIntyre?
Whatever he's called. Michael McIntyre, I never know what he's called. That comedian fella, I don't think he's funny.
What, Michael McIntyre? Well, you're not alone there, Tommy, so I wouldn't worry about that. I don't think many people...
Have you seen him on live at the Apollo, just jumping around on that stage? I'm thinking, God, what a nutter. I think the audience is just pity laughing him, you know what I mean? So when he goes, good night, thank you, that's the biggest applause he has.
I love it when he comes on and he says, here I am in Birmingham, my most favourite city of them all. And everybody jumps up and goes, yes, it's great, isn't it? It's a lovely place, Birmingham. You can't do that.
I'll tell you what, Tim, you sound just like Jasper Carrot. You sound Jasper Carrot when you do that.
That's not surprising because he comes from my neck of the woods. So yeah.
Yeah, you do really sound like him when you've done
right,
that. Yeah, I was thinking of Jasper.
Oh, Bill Berry, that's my favourite comedian. I think he's good.
I don't know any of the latest. I was watching one when I was in London over Christmas. I can't remember his name. But. I know Ricky, my son, has got a video of him, and he's. But then again, I didn't think his humour was over funny. You know, it's that guy that goes, "We're going out." You know that guy.
I know the one, Mickey Flanagan, isn't it?
But do you know what though? I don't know. It's because I've got a pretty broad sense of humour, as most people know to listen to the show. But you know, when I was listening to him, I really thought he weren't that funny. Do you know what I'm saying? It's just, he was trying to be really funny, but I didn't quite get it.
Well, yeah,
it's me.
Humour is something that not everybody is going to get humour in the same way. I mean, I find that whenever I try and pull a few jokes like that when I'm talking to an American audience, and sometimes there's like a stunned silence on the end, which is only fair because not every American understands the British sense of humour. It works the other way around as well. There are some things that we as British people don't appreciate from other parts of the world. But Jasper Carrot, I mean, I love Jasper Carrot, and I've actually got a couple of routines which incorporate Jasper Carrot songs. You know, when I go out, as you know, I do a bit of playing and singing, and I've got a couple of Jasper. I won't do them all now, but they go like, "Didn't we have a lovely time the day we went to Dudley?" And I'll sing that for you maybe later if we get 5 minutes. It's
why not? Well, as I say, it's Friday night, Tim. If you've got your guitar, we always look. I think this will be. It's always interesting because Tim, he's not just a great orator as he is, and the great part of the team. But
you're
also
making me blush. You're making
his vocabulary is impeccable. I'm his grasshopper.
I've got to say
he has
now,
so much to teach this little grasshopper.
I've got to say that I wouldn't say that Tim was well accomplished with the violin, but he's pretty good on the guitar. Would you not agree with that statement, Tim?
Well, I really couldn't say. The biggest problem I've got here is actually the microphone that I'm using. It's not the best microphone for musical. It won't pick up musical frequencies in the same way this will pick up voice frequencies. And consequently, if I were to try and play and sing at the same time, it doesn't really come over very well. But I'm going to sort that out, and I'm going to. When I do sort that out, you know, I'll be a bit happier about giving you a rendition on the guitar and singing at the same time. But it's very kind of you to say so. And Kel is quite right about my vocabulary being impeccable. I mean, you just try pecking it. You just try pecking it and see what you get. It's completely impeccable.
Over to you, Tommy. Mr. Tim Best, and here is the British version of Kelsey Grammer. They've both got impeccable vocabularies.
Oh, Kelsey Grammer.
Oh, come on, bit. Kelsey Grammer is very well spoken, isn't he?
Indeed, that he is. That he is. He is always correcting my malpropisms, if that's a word.
Yeah, that's because he went to grammar school. He was one of the posh ones.
Grammar school?
Yeah. He did.
Oh, I love that.
Tim, didn't you go to grammar school, mate? Didn't you go to grammar school?
Who?
You.
Me? Well, I didn't. It just happened. How did you know that? What makes? What
because
gave
you
it
said,
away? Oh, did
you
I?
Said
oh, okay.
Before, Tim, that you were in grammar school. That's why his grammar's impeccable, Kel. Boom, boom.
Well, yes, of course, you're absolutely right. I did say that. I'd forgotten all about that. I try not to mention it too much, you know, because
one of the posh kids. He was one of the posh kids, guys.
That's the reputation.
And he doesn't
here,
engage in pashimas, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, over here we used to have a large number of grammar schools, but back in the 1950s there was a British politician who didn't think very highly of them. His name was Anthony Crossland, and he was famously recorded as saying, "I'm going to destroy every effing grammar school in the country." And sad to say, he did actually succeed in doing that. And so we don't have grammar schools in this country anymore, which I actually think is a great shame, because it was something that any child could go to. If you were bright enough and worked hard enough, you could get to a grammar school. And
you had to pass. Ladies and gentlemen, at the time, and I remember, because me and Tim are a very similar age, that I remember that you had to pass what they called the 11 plus. There was it was a thing that you had to take, an exam that you had to take to show if you was in that sort of a calibre of, you know, you had the right calibre to be a part of the grammar school curriculum.
Yeah.
That's the case, wasn't it, Tim?
Well, it was, and Anthony Crossland, who was the politician, he was a Labour politician, I think, back in the 1950s and 60s, he thought this was a bad thing. He thought it was bad that children should have somewhere that they could go if they were clever enough to get there on merit, and so he destroyed the grammar school system just because he could. And consequently, you don't have the educational system where bright children can go and get on and they're not held back. And I think that's really sad because, a lot of people used to say it was an elitist thing to have a grammar school system. But the point is, if you've got somewhere where bright kids can go and aren't held back by their peers. I know this sounds a terrible thing to say, but the achievements that can be made benefit the whole, not just the children themselves, but they benefit the whole country. And a good example of this is Estonia. Now, in Estonia, they made maybe 20 years ago, they made a great effort to, they said, we're going to excel in certain areas. Our country is going to excel in certain areas. And one of those areas, I recall, was computing. And they said, right, we're going to set up computing centres of excellence just to see what will happen if we attract the best and the brightest kids. And what happened was, amongst other things, they invented Skype. believe it or not. And Skype, of course, is something that benefits the whole world. Well, certainly the whole world who happens to be attached to the internet. And that's what I mean.
Well, it's amazing. Skype is an amazing achievement in itself, isn't it? Millions upon millions of people.
What I'm trying to get to, Jeff, is that if you give people the opportunity to develop these things and get rid of all the elitist labels that lefties and other socialists want to put on you, great things can be achieved, which then benefit the whole of humanity, even though it's not obvious when you start. And that's why I hate socialism so much, because it holds everybody back, because it doesn't believe in allowing the best and the brightest to go forward. Because socialists just hate the idea of the best and the brightest having a position in society, which is seemingly more advantageous for them than it is for other people. But the point is that the things that can be achieved when you've got a society that's based on merit, they are good for everybody. And socialists always flatly refuse to see this, which I think is a great, great shame. Anyway, I won't rant on about it too much.
It's interesting, Tim, that we explore that. You know, and the thing about it is the chat room is very much in line with some of the things you've been saying, and a lot of chat's been talking on, and lead to an entrepreneurial spirit, and that's for Carabella, grammar schools at the time. And that was what it was all about, the entrepreneur, I can't pronounce it.
Entrepreneurial.
Yeah, Tim as well.
Yeah, I mean, Eric Carle was saying about kids not being able to go to Oxford or Cambridge, but I mean, the thing is that it starts a lot earlier than that. So we always used to have a selective educational system, and if there were some bright kids, we used to try and make sure that they were put into an environment where they could excel. If they had the opportunity to excel, we made sure they could do. And now we don't have that, or at least unless you pay for your child to go to private school, which can cost tens of thousands of pounds a year, and only the very richest people could afford it. We don't have that. But the thing about the grammar school system was anybody could go to a grammar school. It didn't matter if you were poor or rich or it didn't matter if you were poor. You could go to a grammar school and you could be in an environment where you could, if you were good enough, you could excel and go on to great things.
It gives children at the time, it gives them something to look forward to if they worked hard enough. And to get into grammar school back in the 50s, early 60s, it was a great achievement, wasn't it, at the time? And it seems very sad that the school system has lost its way in that way where kids can excel.
Yeah. I mean, that's what you get when you put socialists in charge of things. They will completely destroy the entrepreneurial spirit if they get the opportunity. I mean, Sarabella has put a comment in the chat room about when she lived in Twickenham when she was very young. And when she came back home, which I presume she means in the States, she had to be put ahead in another class because the kids at that age weren't doing their times tables. I just think it's a shame because I think every child should have the opportunity to have a great education. But because you've got socialists in charge of the educational system, it just ain't happening. And I think that's a tragedy. Well, I think it's more than a tragedy. I think it's criminal. But if I'm allowed to, I'll go on about this all night. And I think I ought to hand the mic back. So.
I think it's good to explore that. You know, when we do a show and some of the issues and topics that we talk about, is so important that we discuss, and that's exactly what we've been doing. But I do know, because I see a little message that there's an article that Kel, she lost the page, and I know she's got it back. Maybe we can continue talking about this a little bit later on. But I know Kel's got an article that she wants to share with herself and, of course, to the listening audience out there. So with that, Kel, I'll pass the mic to you.
Well, I just want to say what Tim is discussing is absolutely fascinating, and I really feel bad that I kind of broke the thread.
Oh, don't worry about that.
No, that's okay, because we can always come back later on anyway. If there's a few other, maybe people want to discuss some other parts of what we was discussing, and that's okay. It's what we're here for. We do show, and we interject, and we talk about different aspects of the topics that we're discussing. So, but anyway, we're going to pass it back to you, Kel, because there's a topic that I know you wanted to, and an article that you really wanted to put out there to discuss on the show this evening. So with that, the mic is yours, Kel.
Well, I need your help. And I need the help of the listeners and people in the chat room if they can help me out with this. And we talked about this a little while back, and this is the proposed values clause that the province of Quebec in Canada wants to introduce. Now, just to give a little bit of a history to refresh people's memories, this is the Quebec Premier Pauline Maurice. She wanted to introduce a charter of Quebec values. And that would include, this proposal would ban overt and conspicuous religious symbols by government employees. It would make it mandatory to have one's face uncovered while providing or receiving state service. Quebec will entrench the concept of religious neutrality of the Quebec a Charter of Rights and Freedoms. A bill was supposed to be tabled this fall. I have not seen any follow-up on this yet, but I can certainly look into that. Moray's minority government would require opposition support to pass the bill. The Conservative government says it would mount a legal challenge against the new Charter of Quebec values if it was deemed to violate religious freedoms. We're categorically in rejection of this approach, and this is from the New Democratic Party leader Thomas Mulcair. Justin Trudeau, who is the federal leader of the Liberal Party of Canada, has accused Murray of playing a divisive identity politics. Now, we know pretty much what this charter was really gunning towards, and that was towards the Muslims, because Quebec's identity, they are a distinct society within Canada, and they felt that they were getting overrun with these overt religious symbols. But in introducing this policy, they have thrown all religions under the bus, because I don't think anybody would have too much of an issue with a tiny crucifix around the neck, or a Jewish ring, or a headscarf that the Sikhs wear. And the turban, I'm sorry, my apologies, that the Sikhs wear, or even the headscarf that maybe a Muslim woman would like to wear, the hijab. That is not too much of an issue, because their faces are uncovered. It's the kneecaps that they're having the issues with. And I think that that is something that we can certainly respect and understand, because I do not like the idea of interacting with anybody who is their face is fully covered. We have also had incidences where crimes have been committed because of the niqab, and that is pretty much the crux of the issue. But what's going on is that all the Muslims are standing up in solidarity in this, and there is a video out there right now, and it is from a group of Muslim girls in the province of Quebec who are joining the brigade to stop this values clause from going through. There are 10-year-olds, 8-year-olds, 9-year-olds in this video. I'm going to play a little bit of it for you, and I have to do the interpretation because they're not speaking English. But this is what the exploitation... I'm going to get to that point in a minute, but this is exploitation to me. And the question that I want to ask the panel when I wrap this up in a few minutes is, how do we defeat Islam when the exploitation and the indoctrination is passed down by generation by generation? But just take a listen to some of this, and here, let me bring it up a bit. Here we go. Okay. This is in Montreal. My name is so-and-so, and I am 10 years old. It is an obligation of every Muslim to wear the hijab. For me, the hijab is like wearing a crown on my head. I don't care what other people look at me. It's my religion, so I wear the hijab. I tell her at my age, she must wear the veil. Because Allah wants it. And as you can tell, the interpretation is that the grammar is atrocious, even worse than mine. So bear with me, guys. My name is so-and-so, and I am 10 years old. I wear the veil because Allah wants me to do this. I wear the veil because Allah wants this. One day I forgot that I was not wearing my hijab. And the janitor was at our house. I was walking into the house without my hijab. So when I went into my room, I remembered that I had to put my hijab on. I please Allah before pleasing people. My name is so-and-so, and I am 8.5 years old. I wear the veil because my mother wears the veil, and it pleases Allah. And Allah's messengers also. When I wear the veil, I am happy but shy. And I'm just going to stop it right there, because if I have to share any more of this claptrap, I'm going to get my truncheon out again and do some very, very nasty damage to this.
Oh, you're not the only one there, Kel.
Yeah, yeah. It's good job I've got a bucket at the side of my desk. That's all I can say. Poor kids, you know. Those poor kids.
And that's it. That's the question that I have for the panel. And my question in particular is, how do we defeat the political aspect of Islam when we have this indoctrination going on? These are politically exploited kids, obviously, but it has been drummed into their head. And we have seen the Mickey Mouse cartoon out of Palestine where Jews are apes and pigs. Like, how do you know that? You're 4 years old. Because the Quran says so. Like, how do we defeat the ideology of Islam when we can't even keep up with what the kids are being taught in their homes? It's two steps forward. I feel it's one step forward and two steps back some days. And Jeff, what do you think?
Well, I agree, Kel. I agree. It's the indoctrination, as you say, generation to generation, being passed on to brainwash these children. That's the thing. It's how do we overcome this brainwashing by Islam of these young, very young children? And it is a very difficult question to actually answer. Tim, I'm sort of quite baffled of how we go about. It's educating the wider aspect of what's going on. So I don't know. I think that is very much quite a hard question to answer. What we're doing now, having the show as we do, speaking about these things, because it is indoctrination, isn't it? I think we all agree with that. It's a brainwashing technique or conditioning. Let's call it conditioning, because that is the whole thing. I mean, children, sort of when they're born, they're not born into automatically sort of involved in Islam. They're taught it at a very early age, right from the time that they, start to be able to talk and that, and it's inbred into them. So it's a very difficult, to get the kids away from Islam. Is that the way, Tim? Do we take them away from this cult?
Let me just collect my thoughts on this a moment. I think as long as you have parents who feel that the pursuit of Islam is a good thing, they will continue to teach it to their children. Now, you could argue, and in fact I'm sure it has been argued in some regimes, that the education of children is too important to be left to parents. I think that might have been one of Stalin's phrases. Tommy will probably put me right on that. And I'm sure in some totalitarian regimes, the state would have been at times very keen to take children away from their parents and give them the kind of indoctrination that the state itself wanted. I mean, the Hitler Youth comes to mind. But the problem is that when you start taking children away from their parents to give them an alternative kind of education, I mean, you may end up with things. The law of unintended consequences is what I often like
to refer
to.
Has opened up is what you're trying to say to him.
Well, yeah, I mean, let's say before Hitler came along and decided he was going to take children away from German parents, who were by and large at that time they were what we would classify as fairly decent Christian people in the main. I think his plans were to actually take children away and give them a state indoctrination at an early age so that they would grow up to love Nazism and to revere Hitler as a cult personality in particular. Now, I'm sure there's plenty of other aspects that Tommy could probably fill me in on here, but I think that when you get into taking children away from their parents in order to pursue a state goal, I think you're opening up a great can of worms. And while I certainly understand that we consider it to be very cruel indeed to indoctrinate children with Islamic ideology when they're only like 2, 3, 4, 5 years old, I think taking them away so that we can give them our own sense of indoctrination is not necessarily the right way to go. I just feel as a principle that it opens up far more moral and ethical dilemmas than it would solve. So I think what I would prefer to do, if I were going to try and solve this problem, I would try and think of a way where it would become obvious to I mean, this wouldn't happen overnight. Whatever we did wouldn't happen overnight. But if we could make it obvious to parents and to everybody who had charge of children that, in fact, Islam was a failed ideology and that the pursuit of Islam was completely futile, then they might then not teach it to their children in due course, because they would come to realise that it was a futile pursuit and one not to be recognised. I mean, I dare say that you could point to an awful lot of civilizations in the past that probably did take the approach that they were going to take children and bring them up in a certain way, despite what the parents wanted. In fact, I'm sure that sort of thing goes on even in the West today. I'm sure I've read of cases, again, in Germany. This is modern-day Germany, where parents who wanted to homeschool their children in defiance of the German state were actually penalised, had their children taken away. I haven't got a link to put into the chat room about this. This is just something I recall reading only a few months ago about something that happened in Germany as we speak, and I've felt quite astounded that would actually be allowed to happen. But, you know, it does happen. So I suppose the short answer is, let me just get to the end of my point. The short answer is, I don't think we ought to be in the business of taking children away from their parents, even though the parents are bringing them up with unpalatable ideas. But I do think that we ought to defend ourselves against the consequences of that. And if we can do so in such a way that makes the parents realise that bringing their kids up with Islam is likely to lead to horrendous consequences, then the parents themselves may well stop doing it of their own accord. But we would have to do something which would be probably politically unacceptable to get to the point where parents would say to themselves, I'm not going to bring my children up in Islam, because if we do, some, you know, terrible things will appear on their future horizon. Now, I think we're light years away from that at the moment, but I think I think we really ought to be thinking about solutions where it becomes obvious to everybody, not just non-Muslims, but to Muslim parents as well, that bringing their kids up in Islam is just a generally a bad idea. Now, we'd have to be quite ruthless in whatever we did, but I still think it would be a better thing than taking kids away from their parents and trying to give them our own version of a good education.
I think you make a good valid point there, Tim. As I said when you first started, it's possibly opening like a can of worms. But also, let's pass it along. Tommy, as I say, Tommy's still quiet. He hasn't been away from the school system for too long now. And maybe he has his views about what we can do. The question that was posed to the panel this evening, Tom. Tommy, your views on what Kel was saying earlier, and my response and Tim's response to what was said.
Well, his answers couldn't beat Tim's answers.
But you're right, because you haven't been too long away from the system, the indoctrination in our schools, Tommy, and you've got a first-hand experience of some of the stories that you shared with us. So, you know, it's so important to air your the way that you look at things, Tommy, because as I say, you haven't been too long away from that what was going on before you saw it, and I know how angry it used to make you, sort of thing.
Yeah,
so maybe you.
What used to happen was at the school I went to, which was meant to be a grammar school, it turned to a public school, and I got to about year nine. That's when all these lovely Pakistani descendants decided to come in. And what we actually had was non-Muslim girls who would just cover their face with a scarf if they went into the East Block, which was mainly the Muslim block, just so they wouldn't get beaten up, have abuse thrown at them. I mean, you had lasses who put a hat on, put a scarf over the bottom half of the face, just showing their eyes, just so they could get through without nothing happening to them. And what did the teachers do? They did the same thing. Scared of their own students. That's what they used to do.
Tommy, could you enlighten us a bit more about, you know, I was talking about the Hitler Youth as an example of child indoctrination. You're knowledgeable on this part of history.
I spent 3 years at college not studying it for nothing.
I was just wondering to get your perspective on that.
Well, the whole idea of the Hitler Youth, I mean, it was set up in 1934, just after, 1 year after Hitler came to power. What the whole idea was for German youth just to stand up, to be proud to be German, just to revere this whole communist policy in the East and the whole Western democratic power in the West. So what they used to do is, basically it was mandatory membership for a German child at the age of five. That's when they got taken away from the parents for about 2 years as they went through all this training in these camps. It all happened mainly in southern Germany, where Munich was and Frankfurt. And what they used to do is tell them how Hitler has saved Germany from Weimar government, how he saved it from socialism and the Jewish banks, things like that. And then after those 2 years, they'd come back in the little black uniforms, and obviously the mums and dads would be so happy with them. Then a couple of years later, they're marching off into the borders of Poland and France. And it kept going on. Even in 1945, we still had young children who had mandatory membership. Even though 2 years before the war ended, you had little kids still joining the Hitler Youth. And the whole point of it was that a male German child had to be physically fit, mentally fit. They used to do war games every Saturday. They used to fight each other with little toy rifles and learn tactics. And obviously, when the war broke out, they already knew what they had to do. But for female Germans, they were told how to cook, how to clean, how to keep a clean home, ready for when the man comes back from the battle. That's all they used to do. So that was indoctrination on how basically they saw this perfect little Nazi world.
Interesting, Tommy. And that's what I'm saying. It's always nice that we've got a panel that we can... you've got a more of an insight on some of the histrionics of back in the early 30s and 40s there, Tom. So it's only right that...
Well, guys, it wasn't just the Germans. It was the Italians, the Hungarians, the Soviets, Finns, Hungarians, Bulgarians, Yugoslavs. They used to take the kids off the way from the family just to train them into a political agenda.
I think what we're working round to is what we're saying is, when I was touching on earlier about how we've got to make it so horrendous for Muslims to bring up their children with Islam as a guiding ideal, we've got to make the consequences so horrendous. And I think Cerebella put a note in the chat room to say, yeah, consequences are the key. Because at the moment, there are no consequences for Muslims. If they bring their children up with Islam, there are no consequences. They are being rewarded. Everything that Muslims do is currently being rewarded by the West. And we've got to change that. We've got to change it in such a way that Muslims have got to realize that bringing up their children with Islam or following Islam themselves in the way that they've been used to doing is just going to lead to opening up a whole can of whoopass on them in one way or another. And of course, with Nazism, what it took was the complete defeat, the complete crushing of Germany towards the end of the Second World War.
Yeah.
And I suppose at that time, all the people who'd been involved in whatever way in educating children via the Hitler Youth and that, they very quickly had to decide where their loyalties lay. And I suppose most Germans realised at that point that Nazism had no future. And we've got to do something similar. We've got to make people realise that Islam has no future. And now we can do it. We'd have to be ruthless about it, and that's what I'm saying about the political will is not there at the moment. We could, I'm sure, devise the steps right now and implement them right now if the political will was there to make Muslims realise that the pursuit of Islam was futile, and that any Muslim, whether it was at individual level, group level, or state level, that pursued Islam would very quickly find that the consequences would just be too horrible to contemplate. And I think that's the answer. That's what we're going to have to do. If we want to stop the relentless growth of Islam, we've got to take away the rewards and make sure that Muslims suffer the consequences, because at the moment they're not suffering any consequences at all. They're being rewarded for what they do. But
yeah,
ought to pass the mic.
There's been a mixed response with myself, Tim and Tommy. So it's a very difficult question, but I think as far as we go on what Kel raised there, was quite a mixed response of different views. And I think, Tim, what you said, as you say, we're talking about taking children away from Islam, that you could really be opening up a can of worms. So we put that to the side.
There are all sorts of moral and ethical considerations.
One of the
commenters in last week's chat room actually made the point that when we're fighting monsters, it's important that we don't become monsters ourselves. There was a time when I actually thought of taking children away from Muslim parents as a possible solution. But I really don't think we should be going down that route, because we are better than that. We are better taking children away from their parents. Because the cornerstone, one of the cornerstones of our democracy, our civilization, is that we pursue goodness and beauty and truth. And I think if we go down the line of taking children away from their parents, no matter how good we might think it might be for us in the long run, I think we're proving ourselves that we would be proving that we're no better than them. And we are. We are much better than them, and we have to demonstrate it at every level. But if it means introducing consequences which are going to be severe enough for Muslims to say, all right, pursuing Islam is a bad idea, like Germans at the end of the Second World War obviously got the message that pursuing Nazism was a bad idea, I think that's going to be the way forward. But we are going to have to be ruthless.
Well,
but we're being ruthless in a somewhat different way. And we would be ruthless in a way which would mean we could still... I know this might sound a little odd when I say this, but we would still be true to our ideals of pursuing goodness and beauty and truth, because we'd be showing people that there is a much better way than Islam, and that if they follow it, they won't suffer the horrendous consequences that they would if they continue to follow Islam. As I'm talking, I realise that there are ethical and moral considerations to what I'm saying. But I don't want to hog the mic, so I'll pass it back, and perhaps we could hear a bit from Kel. I haven't heard your voice on this one, Kel.
Oh, thanks, guys. There's a lot of questions being arisen in the chat room, and one that I always ask, and what about in all that we know about Islam, why is there no reason why our Western governments will not de-index it as a protected religious status? Why can we not remove their religious status and actually declassify them within a protected status underneath the umbrella of religion, in all that we know that what Islam is capable of? And especially as Sarah Bella brought up a really good point in the chat room about female genital mutilation, we know that these practices go on, that they are carried on. Why is it that we cannot have Islam de-indexed as a religion? That is my question. I'm really furious with our Western governments, the dimitude. And I know, and Tim and myself, we've had quite a few conversations about this, and we have reached a conclusion. It's not so much the dimitude, but it's the outright ignorance. Politicians don't want to know about Islam. They want to collect their pensions, and they want to retire on a sandy beach somewhere where it's really warm and leave the rest of us to clean up the mess that they refuse to deal with. Another thing as well, we have to stop treating Islam like it's a baby and it needs to be coddled, because Islam is very capable of taking care of itself. Something else, I don't want to get too deeply into this, but on the Red Fox blogger a few months back, Bonnie of Bare Naked Islam, whose article I posted in the chat room a little while back, and I'll repost it again in a moment, we were talking about this, and she said, what we have to do is we have to make it as comfortable as possible for them to leave. We have to give them incentive to leave the West and go back to wherever Islam is the dominant religion and Sharia is the law of the land. We have to make it comfortable for them to leave the West. We can't force them out, because that would create a lot of problems. We can't turn the Middle East into a glass parking lot, because that would, of course, create a lot of problems. We cannot defeat Islam via violence. We talked about that last night, in fact. But what we can do is that we can make it as appetizing as possible, in that they will want to leave the West. We can make their lives uncomfortable in the West, but we can offer them incentives to leave and not return, because a lot of Muslims, of course, are born in the Western countries. But we can make it very, very inviting for them to leave the West. Get them
the best incentive I can think of, Kel, is that if we can get people like Anjem Shah and all the imams in the West to come in together in one room and just say, right, if we pull our forces out of Muslim countries, you've got to leave ours. One hand washes the other.
Tommy, you're brilliant.
No, I think that's a good point you make there. But guys, what I'm going to do, if we maybe we can continue, because it's very interesting. As I say, the chat room's been buzzing and, you know, throwing questions backwards and forwards there. But what I want to do is to say this time next week, I know Tommy will be gearing himself up for his trip to Slough. Okay.
Going to Slough.
So this will be the eve. Next week, this show will be the eve of the Slough National Demonstration. So with that, I'm going to play this, and of course this is Martin Hive, the Slough promo. So with that, and I'm going to be back in about 3 minutes, 3 minutes and 52 seconds. So with that, over to you, Martin.
EDL News. On the 1st of February, the English Defence League will be holding a peaceful protest in Slough to draw attention to the Council's decision to approve the building of a new Islamic centre in the area. The centre will be funded by a Muslim group who openly supported the murder of a Pakistani politician who was opposed to the country's blasphemy laws, a law where anyone who criticises Islam could face execution, which is common in many Muslim-majority countries. Even though local residents were opposed to the building of an Islamic centre funded by this group and drew up a petition against it, the project was still given the go-ahead by the local council. A resident who did not wish to give her name for fear of being attacked said, "This is not just a local issue. All across the country, the British public's concerns are being ignored by local councils and MPs as more and more of these unregulated Islamic centres are being built against local residents' wishes." A spokesman for the English Defence League said that while mosques and Islamic centres all across the country continue to be unregulated by our government, there is always a risk that the teaching of verses from the Quran that call for the murder of non-Muslims, verses that the killers of Lee Rigby quoted after he was hacked to death on a London street, could be used to radicalize more and more Muslims and turn them into terrorists. The English Defence League will once again be holding a peaceful protest to draw the public's attention to these problems, just as we have held protests in the past against the epidemic of Muslim paedophile gangs and attacks on British troops. He also stated that contrary to what the mainstream media would have the British public believe, the English Defence League is not about race, and it is proud to have black, Asian, Jewish, gay, and all kinds of members. And if people visit our website, our Facebook pages, or watch our videos on YouTube, they will see this is true. The English Defence League exists because our politicians are unwilling to deal with these problems, so it has been left to people like us, ordinary men and women from all different backgrounds, to highlight these problems in the hope that something will be done. He also added that if anyone is concerned about Muslim terrorism, unregulated mosques, paedophile gangs, or any of the issues that our politicians seem unable to deal with, then you are welcome to come and join us in Slough on February the 1st, no matter who you are or where you come from.
Well, there you go, and that was news from the EDL about the Slough National Demonstration next week, which I know Tommy will probably be reading a speech out next week, which he did read
mm-hmm.
on the show. So now you're starting to buzz a little bit, aren't you, Tom?
I was just thinking, now I've had the news, maybe it's over to Tim Burton for the Islamic weather reports.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Oh,
with the news, we're going to pass the mic over to Mr. Tim Burton to give us a web report on the growing clouds of Islam. So with that, over to you, Mr. Tim Burton.
You've caught me on the hop. Hang on a second. It's all right. My
little imp.
Freeze up. Oh, here we go. The weather report for Friday, the 24th of January, 2014. The black cloud of Islam continues to loom over Western Europe. Around lunchtime prayers, Muslims became severely offended. There was an 80% chance of rioting and an increased chance of anti-Christian and anti-Jewish thunderstorms as a result. However, not to worry, because this is likely to lead to showers of appeasement blowing in from central government over the next few days. And as a consequence, the winds of diversity training will blow up and down the country and across the continent. However, there is some good news. As usual, we can rely on the EDL to provide a few rays of sunshine and sanity. Thursday, Friday and Sunday evening, bringing with them the associated bright light of truth. The bright light will dawn on people during and after each episode, helping to dispel the black clouds of Islam and slowly but surely driving them back towards the Middle East. That concludes the weather report for today, Friday the 24th of January 2014.
Oh, that
Yay.
Was great.
Absolutely awesome, as usual, Tim. I know we caught you on your back. There you go.
Now I can explain that.
And of course,
that
was Mr. English himself, and he said
I can explain that. They were shouting at me, so he shouted it back, and they soon shut up. That was at Ashton, and I think that was June, I think it was, and we was all sat there over these metal barriers there. You can hear the UAF in the background there, so me and Scott waving our his red flag, started kicking on this metal barrier going off our streets, Nazi scum.
Oh, I remember that so well, Tom.
Oh,
I remember that.
We have another announcement We have another announcement that we have to share, but before we do that, I think that we should thank the people who are joining us in the chat room, and of course the host of the radio program is Jeff. His panelists tonight are Tommy, Tim, and Cal. But we have Bigfoot, British News, which is Army. We have Sarah Bella, who has been my mainstay this entire show. She is just so wonderful. We have Eric Kyle, another wonderful person joining us. We have numerous guests and welcome guests, and thanks for being here. We have Hold Your Awakens moving forward. And, of course, last but never least, our sweet Sue from New Mexico joining us. But one thing I wanted to share, gentlemen, is that one of the guests in our chat room, Holger, he also has a radio program heard right here on Blog Talk Radio. And on January 25th at 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Holger has a very special show with fellow professional counter-jihadist Gadi Edelman, and they blow the lid off the myth called Palestine.
On Saturday night, January 25th, at 10 p.m. Eastern Time, The Awakening on Blog Talk Radio with host Holger Awakens will finally set the record straight in regards to the so-called Palestinians of the West Bank and Gaza. For far too long, Islamic propaganda and Western media dimitude have perpetuated the lie that there is a Palestinian people that there is a land called Palestine and that the Israeli people somehow occupy this land. This night, the 25th of January, the lie will die. Join Holger Awakens on this special night as he welcomes counterterrorism expert Gadi Adelman to discuss just how the Palestinian fantasy was created, why it has gotten traction, and what the end result has been in the entire Middle East. The Awakenings presentation of The Palestinian Myth on Saturday, January 25th at 10 p.m. Eastern. Be there and learn the truth. Be there as the evil of the Middle East is dealt a death blow.
I was going to say, it's funny, Kel, but I had my finger on the button. I was going to play that. I was going to say, also, we have a hold, and you done it. You beat me to the button there, Kel.
There you go.
Yeah, you beat me to the button. I had my finger on it. But yeah, that's another great show tomorrow night, and one of those specials for Holger. And guys, you got to listen to this show. Okay, some of us, it's going to be a little bit late. It's probably going to be about 4 o'clock in the morning, but we will get up to speed in it on Sunday morning. That's what I normally do anyway. But that's going to be another great show. So. I think everybody's looking forward to this one. It's been a lot of promotion about this one, so I know Holger's looking forward to it, and a lot of us will be tuning into the show as well. So there you go, Kel.
And there you go. And 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, if you're in California, that is going to be 7 p.m. Pacific time, and you can just follow the clock along, and there you go. Of course, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 10, 11, 12, 1, 2, that's 3 a.m.
Greenwich
Mean Time. Not 4 a.m., right, Tim?
Well, hang on a second there, Kel. 7 p.m. Eastern Time, did you say, or did you say Pacific Time? I'm just... It's just I thought if it's 7 p.m. Eastern time, that's going to be midnight Greenwich Mean Time. If you said 7 p.m. Pacific time, then yeah, you're right. It's 3 in the morning GMT. It always does my head in trying to do these mental gymnastics at this time of night. It's not good for me, you know.
Well, let's not forget then, guys. It's 7 p.m. Eastern time, midnight Greenwich Mean Time, and 1 a.m. Pakistani time.
No, it isn't.
Tommy, you're so good. Hey, Jeff.
No, it isn't. Pakistan time is at least I don't know, got to be 4 or 5, if not 6 hours in front of GMT, surely.
I thought it's 4 hours in front of Eastern Standard.
No, it won't be 4 hours in front of Eastern Standard, I'll tell you that. It's gonna be about maybe 6 hours, maybe more, in front of GMT. I'd have to get my clock program up, but it's definitely going to be that order of magnitude.
I do apologise, guys. Tommy English's best subject wasn't maths. His best subject was history.
Well, what is
there?
I have to let you into a secret, guys. I've actually sold Tommy one of those watches, the same watch that I sold Kel.
Oh, one of
the
wonky
watch. Yeah, I'm still returning
watch.
That thing.
Still boy watch.
The worst Christmas present ever.
Sorry about that.
we do have somebody joining us on the line. This is a caller, and he's very interested in world events, and he would like to discuss that with you, Jeff, and I'm going to bring him on right now. Welcome, caller, to the East Anglian EDR radio show.
Yep.
Hello. This is Wahabi here from the Spongistan.
Hi, Wahabi.
Yes, I am calling because this Funny Friday show, the EDL show, I am ambassador secretary, state secretary from Spongiston. So I am calling to your show.
Excellent. Well, welcome.
Well, it's great for you to tune into the show there. Absolutely fantastic to take your call. And you're calling in from
where? Somewhere.
Secretary from Spongiston. Spongiston, we are sponges from Rio, and you stand for it, and we love you. And
It's our pleasure. That's what I say.
Yes.
Oh, it's our absolute pleasure. Please take whatever you want. It's all you people are good for, raping and pillaging.
I'm sorry. My hearing's bad connection, but I want to call and tell you I like your show. I here to tell you we are small country, mountain countries, southeast of Crimea, very far away.
Come here from Spongistan.
Yes.
Well, it's great to take your call. It's great to hear that you're tuning in to the East Anglian's EDL radio show.
You see that
did you
right
say in the middle of a village somewhere?
Yeah, in Spongistan.
Well, one at a time because I have so many accent on the phone, maybe one at a time, but I call to tell you we are a good country. We have science, culture, good economy. Be part of UN Council very soon, and our major export is yak cheese. Yak cheese.
I love this guy. I love this guy. Wahabi.
He's
got to come onto the show again. That's brilliant. Yak cheese and rubble, no doubt.
Yes, so if you have questions for me, I will stay. If you don't have questions, I will go... I will, as press secretary, I will answer your question.
Okay, the big question is, are you of the Islamic faith?
Oh, are you asking about Spongistan?
Yes.
Spongistan, we have yak-based culture. So we have mosque, we have temple, we have church, we have Guido's pizza. And,
yes.
Everything in Spongistan is yak culture.
Yes, I can tell you, you worship cheeses, don't you? You worship cheeses.
No, everything in Spongistan is 5-minute yak walk from one place to other. So we all get along, nobody talk to each other, 5 yak minute away, walk, everybody's happy.
Fantastic. And how did you know about the East Anglian's EDL radio show to tune in tonight? I'm amazed that we got people from far-flung places across the globe, and you're one of our great listeners who's calling in from, did you say Yakistan or something?
No. I tell you. heard your show. I heard on the internet something EDL thing, a song from a pub thing. So I liked the song, and I found the show on the internet. By the way, Spongistan, we are next science internet nation. So you keep
watch out for
really
that.
What can we say? It's a great honour and privilege to have you call in on the show tonight.
Yes.
You know, as I say, tonight is Comedy Central, so you have to call in at the right time. So I've got to thank you, caller.
I will go. Yeah, I will go. Just remember Spongistan. We sponge up for you and you stand for it, and... we love you.
Spongistan. I get it. Okay.
What a great call.
Absolutely.
Caller. What a great
call. Great call. Spongistan. I've got it. Oh, my
that
goodness,
was a
mate. Ladies and gentlemen, this is why it was called Comedy Central tonight. That call was made it all, didn't it, guys? Absolutely brilliant.
It was worthy of this.
Thank you.
My goodness.
Silence!
What can we say?
I kill you!
Oh, he's back!
Get out of here, Tim.
I'm obviously losing my touch, Jeff. I thought I had as well, but there you go. Silence, I kill you. I'll kill you. Silence, I say. Silence, or I'll kill you. I'll kill you.
Unless you're from Wall Street. Silence,
you.
Wolf, I'll kill you.
I'll consider you letting him get under the radar, mate. You're normally quick off the mark.
Oh, that was so funny.
Well, considerably better killing than yell. But yes, I'm going to kill you. So, behave yourself, or there'll be trouble.
What a fantastic call that was.
A gentleman from Spongistan actually called in on the show. Famous fruit, yak cheese.
I think that this is the perfect opportunity to play a little song that I found. And this is for our little friend, Ahmed, and our other little friend. And where did he run away to? He ran off, didn't he? Yes, he did. But
he
boy,
bloody
oh
left
boy.
Them sandals Wahhabi again, Kel.
Wahhabi was brilliant.
We're going to have a sandal cell, Kel. We're going to have a sandal cell with these bloody sandals.
Exactly. Oh, and actually, this song is also for Tommy. It's 3 minutes long.
Oh,
across the Casbah.
That was Tommy. Everybody's thinking that was me. That was very un-Tommy English singing.
Did I mute myself? Oh, God.
Yeah, you left the mic on, Tommy.
Yeah. I'm working on your Virgin Records contract right now. I'm your agent.
Oh, God. Sorry, I just really like that song.
I know you do. I was actually, Glenn asked if we did make a mention about the demo for next week. Glenn, mm-hmm. Yes, we did actually. We had a promo from Martin Hive for the demonstration next week, just to give you a heads up. You might have been just away when we played that. So, so that's it. Yes, next week. This time it'll be the eve of the Slough demo. And we want feet on the street. It's a national, so I hope we get a lot of people at Slough next week. So there you go. So Tommy, what time are you setting off next week then? Would it be really, really early Saturday morning?
Well, let me put it this way. My body clock is going to be really thrown off. I'm going over to Lincolnshire on the Friday night straight from work, so we're going to be getting up about 2:30, having some quick breakfast over at the all-nighter, straight to Sheffield there for about 3:30, 4:00, leave Sheffield 5:30, and we'll get there for about 11 o'clock.
Goodness gracious me. Goodness gracious me. wow, Tom. It seems like quite an event for you, you know, sort of you're moving about quite a bit for that day, isn't you?
Yeah, that's how it happens with West at 1 o'clock in the morning and we still got there late.
Tom, you hardly ever sleep, do you, when you're going to demonstrate? Every time you set me, I can't sleep.
Nope. I think it was the night before Tower Hamlets demonstration. I was on Kel's show because she said to me, what are you doing awake? Must have been
yeah, you remember that, Kel?
Yes. Oh, yes, I was doing my Friday evening show, and there was a certain somebody in my studio, and it was our dear Tommy. Tommy, what are you doing up so late? You have a demo today.
Yes,
and at the end of the show, she said to me, so what time are you going to be up? Tommy, I went, about half an hour is meant to be going up.
Well, you know what I did. I stayed up, and Tommy and I had breakfast together. Tommy had his cell phone, and he was at the depot, and he was in the cafeteria, and Tommy and I had breakfast together.
We did, didn't we?
We did.
And the security guy said, Tommy, are you speaking to me? We met him from Canada.
That was funny.
I was going to say, guys, listen to this. Eric Carl says, poor you, Tommy. I won't be leaving till 10 a.m. and he's laughing out loud. Did you hear me?
Yeah, well, you get me a pint when I get up there, can't you? You owe me one from Bradford. That's not that you owe me from Norwich.
Oh, you broke up there.
You owe me a pint from Norwich.
Oh, my goodness me. We'll put it on the slate, Tom.
It already is. The interest is going up on that. So far, you owe me. Shot the Jaeger bomb.
A crate now. I owe you, don't I, Tom?
Definitely do.
My goodness me. But now, as I say, it's hopefully we'll see some impressionable numbers on the street next week, and I'll know it's going to be a success. You know, I feel it's going to be one of a good one because we haven't had a demonstration. When was the last time we had a demonstration? We had one this year, Tom. We had one
so far.
No,
first one. Well,
no,
it's
the first one.
We've had the rallies against Don Jim Chowdhury. I know Glenn's had one in Peterborough. I think it was Saturday the week before, but I think this will be the first proper EDL demonstration of the year.
Yeah, national. That's correct. That's right. Yeah, so I was just wondering that this is the first one. So come on, guys, you know, be there. You know, and if you're not sure, get in touch with your Auros and get your travel information sorted out. And I want to be talking to Tommy Sunday or Glenn, if Glenn's sort of around. We have Glenn call in and we can have a little bit of debriefing of how
the day went, because we, this is what the listeners like to hear as well, Tom, to hear like when you what sort of day it was, and you know, not just yourself, but I mean Glenn might be calling in a show as well. So it'd be nice
yeah,
to hear anybody.
I was thinking,
sorry,
actually, maybe Mr. Tim Baird would like to come down on our coach if he's interested. Hint, hint, wink, wink.
When's this? February the 1st.
White rabbits.
White rabbits. Oh, white rabbits. Oh, no, I'm allergic to them. But, yeah, all right, I'll see what I can do for that date.
Well, I'm
promise anything at the minute, but I'll see what I can do.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure we can come and get you in Birmingham. I mean, we've got to go the way to pick people up anyway, so don't be shy. Traveling with the EDL is one of the best experiences you can ever have in your life.
Yeah, I tell you that now from my own experience, Tim, that, you know, it's just you get such a buzz out of it, you know, you see...
Is this the coach with the 72 virgins on it that we were talking about yesterday?
Oh, yeah.
That would be the
virgin
one.
Virgin travel. Yes.
Right. Ex-virgins, Tim.
Ex-virgins. Oh, right. Okay. I mean, I can't see all the fuss about 72 virgins. I mean, give me a couple of fire-breathing whores any day of the week. That's what I say.
Fire-breathing whores.
Like I've said before, Tim, these suicide bombers are only going to get 72 World of Warcraft players.
Good.
So, well, that sounds interesting, Tim, you know. But it'd be nice if you could make it, you know, maybe there's a spot that Tom would be able to squeeze you in on the coach there. It'd be nice to hear your experience of how you... I know you'll get a buzz out of it, Tim. I know you would. You know, it's such a great feeling being a part of, you know, sort of a demonstration and that, you know, the adrenaline rush and just things that just makes
the UAF if we come close. The good weather. I mean, is it actually expected good weather on February the 1st? It's meant to be really warm.
Well, it's nice. Sounding better by the day.
Well, you know, as I say, Tommy, I don't know how many times, and Tommy's been on demonstrations, guys, that Tommy said to me, I was amazed. The sun shone down. It seemed when we started doing our demonstration, the sun just was beating down. And, you know, that you said, how many times you said that when you've been on demonstrations? You were surprised to see the sun, you know, it was in full glow sort of thing, Tom.
Yeah, it's a lot of demos. I mean, I remember the days back in 2010, you started demos, absolutely chucking it down. Then you you start at the end of the match, it seems the sun comes out. It was like, what was it? Oh, Birmingham. Beautiful weather, but then after the demo, it was really, really chucking it down. Oh, it was the dark clouds of Islam soon came over, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, there you go.
but Newcastle was a beautiful day. God, not a cloud in the sky.
Yes, it was. That, Kel, I think this is, we were discussing this last night. I think that was the one that me and yourself, I was Skyping with you, Kel. We had there was a video feed, wasn't there? And we was actually watching the demonstration.
Yeah.
It just blew us both away.
Yeah, started off quite cold as well till we started match. After that, all the clouds just broke up and the sun came out.
Yeah, it's amazing. I don't know. It
was
seems like
brilliant.
This.
Yeah.
It was quite the something.
It was quite the something. I really enjoyed that. Jeff and myself, and we were sitting together on Skype, and we were watching the live feed, and it was fantastic.
It was a swathe of people, wasn't there, Kel? This is what we were. I was so impressed, Tommy, at the depth. You know, when you see as far back as the eye could see, all you could see was EDL walking down that street, wasn't it, Kel? All you could see.
Yep.
As far as the eye could see, all it was the EDL. And
The Georgia Police Force, they are absolutely fantastic on facilitating EDL demos. I mean, the UAF, they really go down on the UAF if they even pull anything. But the really good to us, because, I mean, when we actually got to up to Newcastle, and the police officer came up to me, said, oh, hi, Tommy, hi, Tommy, how you doing, buddy? You come back to Newcastle? I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm back. He goes, okay, as you know, we're here to facilitate your peaceful protest. We are not the Metropolitan Police or the West Midlands Police or the GMP. We're not going to whack the bastards out on you. I went, oh, well, you don't have to worry about us. What's happening with the UAF? We go, well, we're going to have over 1,500 police officers with you and 2,500 with them on their little demonstration of 300 people.
Hmm.
Oh, and I'm just getting a reminder from
the police
Glenn.
Expect trouble from that side, and they don't expect it from our side. And that's quite prominent. That is the, you know, the reason why the numbers are so heavy on the side of them, because we know they try to break through the police lines. We've seen them try that on numerous occasions. You've seen it yourself, Tommy, haven't you? How many times that they try
Tower
to break
Hamlets,
through the police lines?
Oh, you guys, you look at the Tower Hamlets demonstration from last year when you see about 150 Antifa charging through police lines. There's a video of them running down the street shouting, kill the Nazi scumbags, all waving the little black flags. Bloody hypocrite.
Yeah. Yeah, so
I'm just getting the feed is moving very quick, Jeff, and I just want to interject and get this in before the feed in the chat room moves on me. And this is from Glenn, and he wants us to remind people about the Grantham demo on the 22nd of February as well. There you go.
Okay. I will be going back to Peterborough in 4 weeks' time against the grooming gang again. That's what Glenn's saying in the chat as well. So there you go. So thanks for that, Glenn. So yeah, as I say, the feed it's going quite quick tonight, isn't it? And I've just seen Stanger come into the chat room as well. Good evening, Stanger. Good to see you as well here tonight. So yeah. Lost my through the fault there, my train of thought there. Tim?
Yes, you were going to promote the Alzheimer's spot there, Jeff, weren't you? But I think I just want to drop this link into the chat room, only a brief thing.
No,
yesterday we were talking about a school in Manchester, St Mark's Church of England School in Worsley, where the school teachers had invited a so-called Islamic artist to teach to ostensibly give an art lesson to the young children there, and it turned out that he wasn't just giving an art lesson; he was proselytising, and a link put in there is from a site called Fahrenheit 211, and one of their members has done a little bit more research on this guy, and apparently it isn't just a one-off. This guy has been doing his bit of proselytizing up and down the country, and the guy who's done the research on this has found he's actually a bit of an Islamic activist, and he's actually posted various links saying how much he wants to see the black flag of Islam flying over various political institutions throughout the country. So really, he's a real snake, and we don't really want him teaching kids at all. But the big story is, of course, that the school had some inkling of this, and they thought, well, we're just going to bring him in. We're not going to tell the parents until afterwards. I mean, obviously, we'll have to tell the parents afterwards, because the kids will be going home and telling them what sort of day they had with this guy. But he was telling them all in this is supposed to be an art lesson, ladies and gentlemen. And the school invited this guy in, and he was proselytizing and saying how Allah was the God that Christians worship and all this kind of stuff, that you really do not want to be put in front of very young, impressionable, vulnerable children. So the link is actually a follow-on from yesterday, just to say that this guy is actually a lot worse than we thought. He's making mountains of money out of the British educational system, because of course they all think it's a wonderful thing having somebody like that going around the various schools proselytizing to the kids. We need really to be putting pen to paper, or virtual pen to virtual paper, sending people emails and telling them that we are not impressed. So read the article, and if there's anything that you can contribute in terms of complaint, like writing to your MP or writing to the school governors or the headmistress of the schools that he may have been involved with. Please do, because we need to get this kind of thing out of the educational system. So that's it. I've put the link in the chat room. The feed is moving so quickly. I might have to drop
it
in again.
But, yeah, guys, if you follow that link, please do. And as Tim said, the more emails virtual, you know, the you do things on the virtual on the computer, do it, guys. It's so important that you get it out there, because these people have got to realise that the parents of these children, they're not very happy. This shouldn't be done underhand. This should have been out in the open. They should have a letter home saying that if it's okay for the parents that they're going to have this, going to be an Islamic person that's coming into the school, and if they want their children to take note or what, or to stay away from it, to give them the choice. But they wasn't given the choice, was they? Let's be honest, Tim, that was underhanded.
I mean, wrong. Yeah, I mean, in the article I posted yesterday, they made the point that usually when they have any kind of event in a school, the parents are told about it in advance. And there may be some things that the parents do not want their children exposed to, and it's only fair, especially when it involves things Islamic, I think it's only fair that people are given the choice about whether they want their child to attend or not. You all remember, of course, the incident at Littleton Green Community School in Huntingdon in Staffordshire last November. We posted the article in the chat room. A lot of people were outraged about it. I actually wrote to the local MP, because that used to be just up the road from where I used to live and work. And in the end, the headmistress did retract the statement that she would. She sent a letter to parents saying that if their child didn't attend an Islamic workshop at Staffordshire University, they would get a racial discrimination note put on their school career record. Absolutely appalling. And in the end, that was reversed. But, I mean, it's exactly the same thing here, where people think that it's perfectly okay to promote Islam in the British educational system, and really we have to be making a lot of noise about it wherever we see it. And things like any parents out there who are listening, please take a look and see what kind of things are being taught in your kids' school books, especially when it comes to teaching Islam. If it's being whitewashed, as it often is, make a noise, complain Parent Teachers Association or the Board of Governors or the headmistress. Make a noise. Don't just sit and accept it, because they're our kids, and that we do not want them growing up with the lies that are being promoted about Islam everywhere in the educational system. Anyway, I'll pass the mic.
Just grabbed my RE actually from school.
Okay.
Oh, go ahead, Kel.
Yeah, Kel.
No, I was just agreeing with Tim. Get your, if you can, I know it's expensive, and I know that this is not an option for a lot of people, but if you can possibly get your kids out of public school, get them in private school, homeschool them, do whatever it is you can do. And remember, your child's education is not your part-time job. It's a full-time job. Be apprised of everything that is being taught in their lesson plans. Get the syllabus. Read it. Peruse the textbooks. Demand to know exactly what the lesson plans are, because we never know what is going on, especially with these characters like Rizan Yu Hag. Pay attention, folks. Pay attention. And, Tommy, back to you.
I've just grabbed my RE book from year six. So this is going back to the 24th of the 9th, 2004.
What's it say? Islam really is a religion of peace.
Well, what it is...
give me that. Things going to be all right.
This is my section on Islam and what we did in year six. Now, question. What do you think of Muslim women who walk around in the niqab or the hijab? And here's my answer.
Thanks.
Muslim women... Well, I think it might make it a bit humorous, actually, because my mum and dad got called in at my answer at this. Muslim women wear veils and niqabs to stop men look at them in sexual ways. The joke's on them because I have a fetish for people who look like ninjas.
Excellent.
And basically, this is my teacher's response. Outrageous comment, detention.
Oh, my God.
The thing about Tommy, he did... The thing is, with Tommy, he did rebel against some of the things that was being taught in the school, and that's what he used to find himself in trouble over, because he spoke out against what we discuss on this, on the show, the East Anglian Zedo radio show. He was expressing his views, and he got detention over the way that he looked at things, because he spoke out against it. So it just goes to show, that's why it's so important that we have people like Tommy, young Tommy, who's been through the educational system and has seen the changes over that time, haven't you, Tom? So it's good that we've got him as a co-host.
I'm still going through
that
book here, guys. I still haven't looked through the RE book. I've got another one.
Go on.
Here's the question. Explain diversity in my local area. Okay, so I have a Muslim neighbour called Mohammed. The other day I saw him shaking his carpet, so I approached him and said, "What's wrong? Isn't it going to start?"
Yeah. Very good.
And believe it or not, guys, that is actually a true story. I think I was about 7 years old when I did that.
Nice one.
Oh, I like it. Yeah, it's definitely Comedy Central tonight, isn't it, guys? That was a funny call that we had in from a gentleman from Spongistan who likes to sponge off us all.
Yes, it was great. Great. Is he one of our regulars? I was trying to pin him down. He sounded faintly familiar, and I was trying to pin.
Albert Sharp with Kel putting on an accent. Second name.
It was Kel.
Well, how did you do that?
I knew it. It was Kel.
Oh my goodness. I'm a woman of many talents.
There you go, Kel.
I could never do a Wahhabi.
I've just noticed the time is we've got probably about 14 minutes left of the show, and as I say, tonight has been once again we never know. Tonight we knew it was going to be a little bit different, didn't we, Gail? We knew that it was Friday night. We always like to do something a little bit different, and the banner said it all, Comedy Central, and we've had some funny, especially the guy called in from Spongistan. I think that was a classic call. but as I say, we are, you know, starting to tick down.
With Comedy Central, then? Should we tell, has anyone got any anti-Islamic jokes? I've got one. This is one I just received on Facebook from one of our listeners. I was in Halifax the other day walking around the textile section. I pissed myself laughing when I saw a Muslim kid run up to some black curtains and shout, "Mummy."
I just Carabella asked me, "When is your great..." It's a great grandchild. Is going to be due. She's about 5.5 months pregnant, more late, she is. So, three and a half months to go, yeah. So there you go. Not too far. And I will be pleased to announce when the time comes, I'll probably be quite excited on the show and be very, very pleased to give everybody the news of whether, you know, as a little boy, a little girl. I'm quite excited about the upcoming future event of being a great grandfather. I can't believe it.
it's amazing, isn't it? You think you're gonna be, I'm going to be a great grandfather.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. I know. I know what you mean.
Goodness me.
Yeah, I'm. No, I'm. What am I talking about? I'm not a great great grandfather yet, am I? You know that Alzheimer's leaflet? Can I have it when you're finished with it, please, Jeff? Because I'm going
to
bloody need it.
Grandchildren, then.
Yeah,
what are you like?
Yeah, I know. I'm only a grandfather. I'm not actually a great grandfather yet.
Well,
so,
ladies and gentlemen, when my great grandfather on my dad's side passed away, for 18 years he kept saying, "Oh, hi Tony, how was your day at school? My name's Tommy, not Tony," and he did that for 18 years.
Our dear old Trigger, who passed away just a week or so ago, every time he used to walk up the road, he'd say, "All right, Dave." Do you remember, guys? "All right, Dave." He said, "No, my name's not Dave, it's Rodney." He said, "Yeah, I know, Dave." That was classic, wasn't it?
Yeah, I should show you one of the birthday cards, guys. It says, "Happy birthday, Tony."
Happy birthday, Tony!
Sorry, Cal, were you about to just remind us all of something? Was that you, Cal? Just about.
Oh, actually, I was going to make a funny. Quit following me. I post a link and you post the exact same one.
Oh, sorry about that. I'm a stalker. I'm a cyber stalker. I follow.
But you know what? That link that you put into the chat room that we put in there, and that is true. Ladies and gentlemen, Tim and myself, we posted the links to the Liberty GB, and that is truth is never hate crime. Help Tim Burton's defense fund. If you can help Tim Burton, even if it's $20, even if it's $5, there is the donate button right there on the right-hand side of the page. Help defend Liberty GB's Tim Burton against hate crime charges. Donate now to his legal fund, because believe me, this is costing our Tim dearly out of pocket. He is being what I consider persecuted. And I want to ensure that this does not cost him deeply out of pocket. Well, it already is, because he's had to hire counsel. This is totally unfair. This is yet another Takiya artist going after one of our very own. And that's what I have to say to him.
Thank you very much, Kel. And yes, if there's anybody out there who's listening who can help at all, or any suggestions as well, if you have a look on Liberty GB, you'll see a summary of the case, which has actually been picked up and put on blogs and websites all around the world. So if there's anybody at all who knows people who's experienced in this kind of legal scenario, I'd be very glad to hear from them at the moment.
Well, I've been on probation, aggravated assault, but I don't know if that's the same thing, is it?
It's not exactly the same thing. It's harassment rather than assault. I think the case is ridiculous on its face, because how can you harass somebody on Twitter when Twitter has very kindly, while it was designing its software platforms, very kindly put a block button on, so that if you don't like what people say, you just hit the block button. But there you go. That's the state of the law in Britain today. I'm being charged with racially aggravated harassment for calling the lovely Fiaz Mughal of Tell Mama a mendacious, grievance-mongering Takiya artist and a lying Muslim scumbag. I have to say, using the word scumbag might have been a little on the intemperate side and a little injudicious and unworthy of somebody who's been through a 1960s grammar school education in England. What I meant to say was sleazy, rock-dwelling, bottom-feeding bastard sleaze bucket is what I actually meant to say. But there you go. Yeah. Things like that are easy with hindsight, so I do hope
he'll...
Well,
Tim, when I spoke to my solicitor on your behalf, he said because you haven't got previous, the less you're going to get is a caution.
Well,
do you want his number? I can put you in contact with him.
I've, as far as solicitors are concerned, I'm happy with my guy. But what I'm looking for is people who can advise in an expert capacity. I've got a couple of names lined up, but I haven't got anything definite yet. If I do get something definite, I'll let you know, because a couple of people have volunteered to help. The fact that I called him a taquilla artist leads me to think that we really ought to be addressing the whole topic of taquilla in the courtroom. And if we can get if we could get some sort of legal precedent, that would really be good, because as we know, Fiaz Magal is not the only mendacious, lying, grievance-mongering taquilla artist scumbag out there. They pretty much all are, and they'll lie at the drop of a hat. And if we can get that principle accepted in the British legal system, I think it might help a lot. Whether we will or not, I don't know. It's a big ask, especially for a little magistrates' court in Birmingham, but I'm certainly going to give it a shot. And there are a lot of people who are interested. If there's anybody else out there who can help me at all, please feel free to drop me a line on email, or Skype me on catstrangler101, email catstrangler101@gmail.com.
Oh, I'll be very glad. That might help you out, mate.
Oh, well, okay.
How would Tell Mama getting these statistics? As I look at this now, that all 74% of anti-Muslim hatred is online. Where have we got that statistic from?
Well,
49% of EDL sympathisers.
What you have to realise is that Tell Mama are telling lies all the time. They should be called Tell Porkies UK, because they lie so much. And the reason they lie, I mean, that's what got them into trouble last year with the Daily Telegraph. The Daily Telegraph, Andrew Gilligan in the Daily Telegraph, exposed Tell Mama as being a bunch of mendacious, grievance-mongering taquilla artists, because they were making up the hate crime as they were going along. Because they didn't get enough hate crime, they had to resort to making it up. And they got found out, they got called out on it by the Association of Chief Police Officers and the Department of Communities and Local Government. They said, your figures don't add up. And Fiaz Magal threw a paddy, threw all his toys out of the pram, stormed out of the meeting, and he lost all his funding as a result. So he's a mendacious, grievance-mongering taquilla artist, without a doubt. But he's...
You're not going to retract anything when you step into the court that day. You're not going to apologise for any statements you made to him. You're going to be...
If he thinks he's going to get an apology, he's got another thing coming. He's I shouldn't maybe have used the word scumbag when I could have used the perfectly acceptable phrase of sleazy, rock-dwelling, bottom-feeding scumbucket. You know, so
well, I can just imagine the verdict now. It's going to be let Tim play. Shake hands and make up.
Yeah, that's right. Come on, guys. Shake hands. You know you want to.
Kumbaya. Kumbaya.
It's going to be some sort of corner on the playground sort of verdict, isn't it?
I'll give you 7 years transportation to be spent far away from the land, far away from your friends and relations, betrayed by the grievance-mongering taquilla artist, scumbag.
Oh, classic. Well
and
done,
also,
Tim.
Tim
it's quite obvious that Tim's holding back a little bit. I think he's holding back for the court case, aren't you, Tim?
I am. I'm holding back. But Kel's just put in, we've got 3 minutes on the show, so it's good night. No swears ever. And don't forget. Next
hang
about.
Okay, now once again I'd like to thank Kel, Tim, Tommy, and of course the gentleman that called in from Spongistan. absolutely classic. It's been a great show this evening, and we'll be back again this Sunday. So for myself and from the rest of the panel, good night, take care, stay safe, God bless you all, and not forgetting, come on guys, all together now. No surrender.
No surrender.
No surrender. Ever. And with
ever.
That, we are going. I've got that lady saying we've got 90 seconds, so with that, we're going underground.
Take
good night,
care,
guys.
Stay safe, God bless, good night, see you Sunday. Love you, Tommy. Love you, Jeff. See you on Sunday.
People might say that I should strive for more, but I'm so happy I can't see that fine things happening here today. A show of strength with your boys brigade. I'm so happy and you're so fine. You want more money, of course, than the mine. My new deal attempt was for Tommy's wife. Then the public gets what the public wants. Pleasure as they hate me, I've been up already on my fate. People might need some tension to relax me, I'm too busy dodging through the fact. Here's what you get, you made your bed, you better lie in it. You choose your leader, don't waste your trust. The lies will shut down and their promises run. You'll be killing machines with paper rockets and guns. And the public wants what the public gets, but I don't give up.
Once again, we're into the archive section of the show. The live part of the show is over, and the archive has just been... We've only just begun.
To live one life of promises.
Come on.
I do love it when Kel sings.
Get the guitar out, mate.
I tell you what, I don't know if you get this, Jeff, but when Kel sings, I go all weak at the knees. It's a feeling I haven't had for
years.
She's
got a lovely
years.
Voice, isn't she?
Yeah, she has. Lovely. We're talking
go
about
Kel.
Kel.
Sing again.
It's hard to sing a cappella on AM radio.
Oh, dear.
Well, I mean to say, Tim, I was really listening to see if you'd done a rendition of something that you've maybe been putting together, because I know that you've always got something that you're putting together for the show tonight, as it's going to be one of those entertaining sort of a night tonight, which it has been. I've enjoyed it tonight. I was telling Kel I wasn't feeling too well. It was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as you get that light come on and everybody's buoyed up with the show. It lifted my spirits up because I wasn't feeling too great today, Tim. And to hear yourself and hear Kel and Tommy, it does. And that call that we had.
that call is still hanging around.
That was a cracker, that was. It sounded faintly familiar and I couldn't place it, but I just wondered if it was one of our regulars. But I think he was.
I'll be quiet.
It was moving.
I think he,
it was moving.
Yeah,
was it?
He's great. Moving.
Well, I love the accent.
He does a wonderful
accent there, and he used to do that on the Halls of Valhalla with Loki, and he Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And it's great to hear him back. He stopped doing it for a while because, of course, our dear Loki, when he passed away, didn't have the spirit to do it. But he did it
for us.
Well,
it's good to see that he's found that within himself again. I'd love to have him call in again. And it was just a classic moment, wasn't it, Kel, tonight?
it was
so
funny.
Brilliant.
Yeah,
I felt
it really took
a little while to fall in, and then all of a sudden it dawned on me. He was saying, "The country comes from Spongistan, and we like sponging off of you." You know,
No, it's very good. I might actually use that in my next stand-up comedy routine. So, I'm probably going to have to do something. Put together something tomorrow because it's my other half's birthday. And I'm going to have to do a little talent show.
We'll give her all the love from the East Anglians.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah.
So,
I'll do that.
So what are you doing? You're taking her out for a meal there, bruv, yeah?
Well, what we're going to do is have a little bit of a party with just like friends and family and stuff. I probably will take her out for a meal when the fish and chip shop opens up again. You know, on
you
creep.
But no,
I don't know about you,
though,
Tim. I love my fish and chips, and probably your other half does as well. I like my fish and chips. Where I live.
Man, I love London fish and chips. I mean, like the real UK fish and chips, not the crap that we get in Canada. We used to have a little restaurant here where I live, and it was called London Fish and Chips. Oh, boy, that you know where I'm going with this one, right?
You told me about that, didn't you, Kel? We did have a conversation about that.
Oh, we just loved it. Every fish on Friday. We would have London fish and chips. Oh, my goodness. It was the greatest. And they shut down because they relocated to Kitchener. And it's like, well, we can't get to Kitchener. It's way too far away for us. But we can manage to get into town and get to the London fish and chips.
Well,
on
you could
always
open your own fish and chip shop, Kel, couldn't you? You and Mike.
You know what, though? It's all in the batter. It's all in the batter. I need
it
it
doesn't really
good
batter,
batter
unless you've got a decent batter, does it?
Yeah. So, Tim, maybe you're not such a creep after all, because believe me, if you took me to a London fish and chip shop, I would thank you forever and always.
Well, if that's an offer I can't refuse, I shall make a note of that. So next time I'm in Canada,
Kel's
I'll make
very
a point
pleased.
Of...
She's easily pleased. A bag of chips and that's
bag
it. We'll do oyster.
A bag of chips and a piece of fish and I'm on my way, happily skipping down the lane, quite happy. Off I go.
There you
go. Wonderful.
So you got something you got on tomorrow then?
Well, what I was going to say, what we did last year, we had a kind of talent show, and everybody in the family had to do something, a little stand-up routine. Didn't really matter what it was, and one or two people stood up and recited some poetry. A couple of other people sang. I played my guitar, and I'd only really just got into picking up my guitar again after having left it alone for about 20 years. I'm going.
Better thing than the violin, probably, too.
Yeah, well, the violin is something we don't like to talk about.
No.
But, so I'm probably going to do a little something. I've got a couple of things lined up to actually do, and I'm actually thinking about composing... let me see. What can I say? A bit of country and western. I've got a bit of country.
Oh, nice one! I like a bit of country and western myself.
It's going to be called the Ballad of Fiaz Miguel, and it's going to be such a cracker.
I knew it was going to be something like that, Tim. As I know you,
I've got the chorus. I mean, I've chorus from another song, okay, and it goes like it's taken from the old 1970s, I suppose, when we started to have CB radio getting popular over here.
I remember those days, Tim, really well.
Yeah. Keep your wheels out of the ditches, keep the bears out of your britches, 10-10 till we do it again, bye-bye, I'm gone. Keep your wheels out of the ditches, keep the bears out of your britches, 10-10 till we do it again, bye-bye, I'm gone. That's the chorus, okay? And then I just need some words to go into the verses. But it's going to be about it's going to be about the hero is obviously going to be a character called the cat. And the villain,
gee, really?
The villain.
Really, Tim? Well, I'm surprised.
The villain.
Surprise, surprise.
Yeah, the villain is going to be a character called Fiasmagal, and I haven't quite worked in the verses or the rhyming yet, but when I do, it's going to be a little doozy. And I'm going to play that when it's all done. It should only take me a day or so to put something together.
I hope you will do it on the show as well. Please do.
We'd love
what you did last time.
The only problem I have is with the microphone response here, because the microphone I've got is designed for voice, and what I've realized is that if you try and play guitar frequencies at the same time as you're talking or singing, it doesn't like it and it doesn't come across very well. So I'm going to have to
have
fix
you tried
that.
Your mixer at all, Tim?
It's getting the direct feed into the computer and bypassing the standard audio. That's the problem. I think if what I could do is create an MP3 file and avoid using the microphone altogether, then I could upload it and everything would probably be okay. But at the moment, I just haven't got all the equipment I need to do it. But I will look at that, because
I'm sure you'll work it out too.
We really look forward
to future events with yourself, Tim. Because wasn't that brilliant when Tim came on the night and he's playing the guitar and he's done a few verses. We was all rolling laughing. It was great, Tim. I've got to admit,
that we should have ourselves a little Friday segment here.
Well, there might be something to be said for that. Yeah, it's, you know, especially you know at this
we do like Fridays. It's a bit of a fun night. Like tonight, we knew we was going to have a bit of fun tonight, and it's exactly what happened. So maybe we can do something like for future shows. Tim, I know that you're always adventurous with things like that. It could be very entertaining, especially for the listeners. Our listeners must love that. I know myself and Kel and Tommy cracking up. It was absolutely hilarious. Absolutely hilarious. So there's something to...
Yeah, if I can put something together that actually comes across better in terms of sound quality, I'll do it. But I just haven't put a lot of effort into it because there's been other stuff going on, that's all.
Yeah,
but
I will
actually make a point of doing that because I do quite enjoy it. You know, I like writing these lyrics and these things. I mean, Kel, do you remember, Kel, when we did the story of the trek from Medina to Blackpool, and you posted I'm halfway through doing a similar sort of monologue. I haven't completed it yet, but that's going to be another little cracker when that one comes out. So I've got
Your forte with what you do with your sort of writing, your essays, things like that, but also very, very entertaining with different things that you come out with. It just makes it very entertaining for the listeners out there. When we get on talking about serious issues, you bang on it there, and bit of fun. It's what it's all about. It's entertaining everybody and getting down to the nitty-gritty about some serious topics, which I think we all do that very well. And Kel, you know, with some of the topics that you bring up, like tonight was absolutely awesome because it there was three different the conclusion to me. I looked at it, there was three different views of things. And that's what's good about being, you know, part of a panel, too, because we've all got our own views about these things. And the thing about it is, I couldn't really think, what is the way forward on that sort of topic? But, Sim, you come through it and you put some good things out there and for the listeners, because it was a pretty tough one, wasn't it?
Well,
really?
It is. I mean, if the answer was obvious, we'd have done it 1,000 years ago, okay? But it isn't obvious, and a lot of people... The problem we've got is here in the West, we have had it too good for too long. This generation really has had it too good for too long. We've had a very prosperous time of it, really, in the last, I don't know, 50, 60 years, in comparison, I'm talking about, with previous generations, and we've forgotten what it's like to have to fight for things that are important. And I'm talking specifically about us in the UK. I mean, obviously, people in America, they've had things like the Vietnam War to contend with, and we haven't had things of that magnitude. We certainly haven't had bombs falling on our heads in the last 60 or 70 years, and we've forgotten how important it is to fight for things that are worthwhile. And then we're faced with something like Islam, which has been sort of lurking in the wings for 1,000 years.
Yes.
And we have empowered it by the fact that our economy runs on oil and they've got a ton of it underneath their ground. So we've empowered Islam and now we've got to do something about it. And how we do something about it is going to be, it's going to be difficult with whatever we do. But I mean, I thought at one time, I thought maybe, you know, I mean, they're having all these kids. Maybe if we could take all the kids and give them a decent Christian education rather than let them being brought up as Muslims. And then I thought, well, no, because that makes us as bad as them, really. We really need to be cruel, to be kind, but in a different way. And I think we've really got to make it apparent to everybody on the planet, Muslims and non-Muslims included, that Islam is not the way forward. And we've just got to make
discussion, the topic, if you don't mind me interjecting there, so
don't
you find that the question that was posed was how do we deal with it? It was so difficult that we all had different views of it. So it's not going to be, I mean, if we can, we normally see things in black and white, don't we? You know that this is what should be done. But it wasn't quite as easy as that. The question was posed, and you had to take things in the right perspective of how we would deal with it. So it's not going to be an easy solution, no matter, even if we did put people in power that have got the, you know, got maybe use a more of a draconian way about things. But as you say, there's always going to be problems due to maybe if you are a little bit more on the draconian side. But as I say, that's a great question that you posed us tonight, Kel. You know, it's something that we can talk about on future shows as well, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. It's a question.
Oh, I really needed your guys' help. And the three of you came through beautifully for me. I'm very distressed by this in that I have always been rather boastful that Canada seems to be clued in as to what's going on within the realm of Islam. And I see this sort of thing, and it crosses my desk. And I want to thank Bonnie of Bare Naked Islam for that, for posting that on her website. I was watching this. It's 7 minutes long. I only played 3 minutes of it because, like I aforementioned, I was ready to throw up, and Tommy and Tim and Jeff were as well, ladies and gentlemen. This is happening in my country, in Canada, and I really did need the gentleman's help here tonight, and like I say, you came through and you helped me out.
I mean,
it was difficult, though.
There are also signs in other countries that, yeah, I mean, we're not the only people that are thinking about this problem. Obviously, you've got Russia and China. I mean, they take quite a forceful approach in dealing with the problem. And I have to say, I do quite admire the Russian president Vladimir Putin because he is shaping up to be a strong leader right at the time when there is absolutely no moral leadership coming out of the United States at all. It's a terrible thing to see what's happening with the leadership of the United States, but you know it is what it is, and Vladimir Putin is actually taking the kind of stance that we all need to be taking against Islam. China,
I would agree
course,
with that.
China
with you totally on that, especially what he said to Obama that time. He said to him when they were sitting there, he said, "How can you support these people who are so willing to, in front of the cameras, cut a soldier's heart out and eat it in front of the camera? How can you support these groups?" And do you know what? Obama looked embarrassed. He did not know.
Yeah.
He turned his head away because he didn't know how to answer Putin.
Yeah,
that was a good question.
He knows that if he's ever taken to task by somebody with some real moral fibre, he's going to have no answers. Obama just doesn't have the moral fibre at all. He should never even have been elected president for the United States at all. I don't believe he's eligible. I think all this, all the things that about his birth certificate, they all add up to one great cover-up. I believe that he wasn't eligible to start with. And everything that he's done, every foreign policy and domestic policy decision that he's taken since he's come to office, has been designed to weaken America and help her enemies.
The three of us would agree, and I think most of our listeners who's listening out on this archive edition would agree with what we're saying. And the thing that got me, Tim, more than anything, was, you know, there was Putin, who looks a statesman-like person sitting there, and there was Obama, who looked the shifty type, a person you wouldn't buy a car of.
That's right, second-hand car.
You wouldn't buy a car of this guy, would you?
No, I wouldn't.
He looked so shifty. And he didn't really have any answer for Putin. I mean, and he's supposed to be one of the powerfulest leaders in the world, along with Putin and, you know, the high-flying sort of high executive. But he didn't look that part at all. In fact, I know the American people, you know, a lot of people, how embarrassed they were with the things that he's done over the time, the years that he's been involved with the Obama administration. He's done some very, very embarrassing things, you know, for the people of that country. And they deserve, the American people deserve a lot better than him, the same as we in the UK deserve a lot better than the Camerons and the Cleggs sort of regimes that we serve.
Oh, Jeff, absolutely, I agree with that. And Barack Hussein Obama, one thing that I also found disturbing, and Tim, the birth certificate certainly is one of them. I mean, the guy was born in the late 1950s. Who lists a child as African-American? That term wasn't even coined. So decades later, that one was quite the alarm bell. But another thing is that when he attended Harvard Law School, there are students that were apparently in his graduating class, and they all said, "I don't remember this guy."
It's very suspicious.
Yes, I think the fact that he's sealed all his records so nobody can do any checking. Well, I mean, I don't know if that's standard practice for an American presidency. I would have been surprised if things like you know, birth certificates, wouldn't have thought it was a routine thing to do anything with those. But anyway, he is where he is, and I just think it's a great shame for the United States. But anyway,
well, it's a shame for the rest of the world, though, isn't it, Tim? It's just not for the Americans, but the rest of the free world with him in charge of things.
When we had
problems right across the globe. Sorry, Tim, go ahead.
I was just going to say that the fact that we had a strong America meant that the world was actually a safer place than it is now. But having said that, you know, that we've got a few bright lights on the horizon. We do have some leaders that stand up. We mentioned Vladimir Putin. I'm not quite sure what to make about Angola. It's reported that they've banned Islam altogether in Angola and they're knocking down the mosques. I'm not quite
yes,
sure what to make of it. I have a feeling that might all end in tears, if only because they are surrounded by countries where there are a lot of Islamic sympathisers, and I think the borders are going to be so porous that we are probably going to see a lot of very, very pissed off Muslims coming into the country, and I just think they're going to end up with a lot of trouble there. But I haven't, I mean, apart from the original announcement, which was made about, oh, I don't know, 5-6 weeks ago, I haven't heard a hell of a lot out of Angola, so I'm not quite sure what to make of it.
No, and what we're finding out as well, and that's a rather murky topic indeed, Tim, and that as well, the Angolan diplomats in the United States are denying that Angola is actually banning Islam. So, and you're right, I haven't heard anything of late about that either, but it would be one thing you're right about. That could end in violent tears because they are surrounded by countries who are sympathetic to Islam. So,
I'd like to just say, though, Kel and Tim, that what a brave stand that they've taken, though. It's a stand that the rest of the world should take against Islam. Knock down the bloody mosques. You know, ban Islam. That's what they should. This is what the world should do. Instead of pointing fingers at them, saying, "Oh my goodness me," you know, everybody should follow suit, and then maybe we could put some wrongs right. That's what I'm saying. But as you say, Tim, it probably will end up in tears. It's just that the problem with the Dimmies, politicians, and that they would turn a blind eye to whatever massacres would occur, because, as you say, they're surrounded by Islamic sort of countries that the bloodletting of these people. We don't know. We just got to see.
We'll keep
a close eye on this story, won't we? We'll follow this.
We will have to address this problem at some point in the very near future if we're not going to go down the road towards civil war. One of the things that we had a guest on Freedom Loving Infidels earlier in the week, Vlad Tepes. You might have listened to it, Jeff. I don't know if you were in the chat room,
but he was saying one of the
possible alternatives to civil war, if we don't contain and control Islam, is Balkanization, like they had in the former Yugoslavia. I hadn't actually considered Balkanization, but I was thinking about it this week, and I suppose that is a possible, the breaking up of the country into separate enclaves, some of which are 100% Muslim and some of which will be 100% non-Muslim. I suppose that is a possibility, but we are going to have to address it sooner or later if we're not going to see, you know, violence on the streets. Because I mean, in former Yugoslavia, of course, there were lots of atrocities, certainly by Muslims against non-Muslims, and if it's to be believed, and I'm not sure to what extent it is to be believed, apparently the Serbians took it as Christian Serbs. Undertook atrocities against Muslims as well. Now, I don't know to what extent that's the case, because we do know that the Muslims exaggerated it to the point where the United Nations got involved and started bombing Serbian Christians, and this is back in the early 1990s. I remember
that. Yeah, I remember it very well.
And that kind of worries me, because if we start engaging in Balkanization, that would lead to a lot of hostility.
It would. I mean, what you will get is the Muslims will play the victim, because that's what they always do, and they'll try and get national sympathy. And we could quite easily end up with the United Nations bombing areas. You know, they could bomb my house because it's in a Christian area in order to protect the Birmingham Muslims that might have formed a little Muslim enclave in the centre of Birmingham. I mean, it's not beyond the realms of possibility that that could happen, because Muslims are very good at playing the victim. And in fact, I found something out today that there is actually an Arab phrase which encompasses this. I forget. And I'm going to see if I have to find it now. But it means playing the victim specifically is something that that Muslims are very good at, and they do it because it gains them a political advantage. And it's actually it's a concept in Arabic that we don't have in English, and we've been rather caught unawares by Muslims when they pull this stunt, playing the victim and getting other people to help them fight their enemies, even though the Muslims' enemies really are our friends, and we're tricked into fighting our own friends, which is what happened in Serbia. We ended up supporting the United Nations bombing Serbian Christians instead of Bosnian Muslims.
Supporting
the wrong side. And that could quite
I just did a quick Google search, and I came up with a term, and it's called a Daya. I don't know if that's the right term, a D-I-Y-Y-A, and Daya is the financial Daya. Compensation paid to the heirs of a victim.
It wasn't the one I was thinking of, but I'm trying to recall where I actually saw the article now, and I can't recall where I saw the article. But it begins, it's something like Tara Masalata, because that's Greek food. But it's not actually Tara Masalata, but it's two words. Sounds very like Tara Masalata, like Tamasala or Tamalaka or something like that. You say it one after the other. Tamasala, Tamalaka, something like that. It means play the victim because it will gain you a political advantage. That's what it means in Arabic, and it's an Arabic concept.
Well,
and it's what
I think actually that's something I know that yourself, Tim, will go and have a look it up, and maybe we can expand on that, maybe on a Sunday show or something like that. Some further things that we can give some feedback to our listeners about. And it's only right that they should know that what they see, as you say, the word, which I don't know which
I could find the link, but I can't find the link. I'm looking at the. At my Windows at the moment, I can't find it. Don't worry about it.
No problem, but, well, we've got time, haven't we, you know, that we can always, I know yourself, Tim, and I know Kel, that Kel's the Google queen, and you're not a queen yourself, Tim, but I mean,
I'm a drama queen.
Hypothetically speak, and I'm only joking anyway, but no, I know you're pretty quick at picking up on those things, Tim. Maybe that's something we can talk about Sunday,
I mean, I just, it's annoying me now, because I've looked at this link earlier today, and then for some reason I haven't saved it. I've discarded it somewhere. If I find it, I will come back with it. But at the moment,
No problem, Tim. If you could always go back and look on the history side, if you've got your bookmark or something like that.
Yeah, there is that. But I won't sort of worry you about it too much by now.
But it's an interesting aspect of what we've been discussing. But anyway, I know Kel's got... Kel, would you like to promote your show for this evening and explain to the listeners out there what the show's going to be about tonight?
Oh, what I'm talking about, I'm going to be talking about political appeasement in particular. There are some cases that are coming up, and I'm rather disturbed by them. There is one case in particular, and that is that the White House has petitioned, for example, to recognize Islam as holidays to be recognized in the public schools. Sorry about that. And they are promoting the five pillars of Islam. And what I have here is an article explaining what exactly the five pillars of Islam is and why our politicians should stop the appeasement. So that'll be on tonight. That'll be on in 58 minutes, in fact. And I'll be discussing that. I have a few other things here going on. There's always something going on here at the Red Fox, the Mad Fox. I have four questions about Muhammad. I'm interviewing Muhammad tonight. Yep. And he's going to answer some questions for me. So that will be on the show tonight. So there you go.
So you've
going to
you've,
be quite the show.
Yeah, so you've dug him up. You've dug him up so you can he can answer questions, Kel.
Oh, Kel, did you see my Gmail to you? I was watching. Oh, Jeff, you'll probably know this. There's an advert on for Foxy Bingo. You know that fox that wanders around singing Foxy Bingo.
Yes.
And one of his latest slogan is "It's Foxy time all the time at Foxy Bingo." And I thought that would be a great slogan for Kel.
No way!
It's Foxy time all the time. Oh, you're not going to use
that's
that.
That's right.
I thought
Foxy time all the time.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Classic, isn't it? Classic.
I just thought you'd like that.
But
yes,
anyway,
yes,
I know Kel's got to do. She'll be doing a show in about.
Be
I'll give
it
time
up.
To
be
prep
up
a show for this evening. Tim, once again, thank you so much for this part of the show and for all the rest of the evening as well. And Kel, for all the great works that you do for the show. Thank you so much. To all of our listeners out there, we'll be back again this Sunday. So some things that we've been talking about tonight, we might carry on, we might catch up on some of the other discussions Sunday. So anyway, Kel, I was wondering, have we got something nice that we could play out to our listeners this evening?
Yeah, I've got one of Tommy's songs right here that I think would be appropriate to play, and that's by BBB. My apologies. BBB, and that has set the world on fire.
Okay.
Absolutely awesome. So, okay, Kel and Tim, thank you so much. And with that, Kel, this is our exit tune for the night, ladies and gentlemen. So, I'm going to say we'll be back again this Sunday. With that, Kel, over to you.
Thanks, Jeff. And Tim, have a wonderful evening. I will be speaking with you in the near future, of course.
Yes, indeed. All right, then, Kel, you take it easy now. Have a nice weekend and speak to you soon.
You betcha. Gentlemen,
see you later,
you
Tim.
See you, Jeff.
Boom.
Okay, that's myself and Kel. We're signing off for this evening, and Tim's just gone. So good night, Kel, and hope you have a great show later on this evening.
Thanks, Jeff, and I'll see you back here on Sunday, 8:30 p.m.
Okay,
Greenwich Mean Time, 3:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, ladies and gentlemen. Jeff, thank you so very much.
And thank you, Kel. Have a great show later on. Good night, Kel.
Will do. Good night, Jeff.
Good night, Kel.